Good evening, James McKenney here with my Science Hour for December 7th, 2017, and working our way up towards Christmas, that Christian holiday which has been turned into an economic boon for, well, merchants, let's just call it that way. And you're hard-pressed to find anything Christian or for sure related to Christ in the stores or in all the mercantile, whatever. So with that in mind, I'll be talking a little bit more about the Christmas Star tonight, because this past week they came out and remember that the big push since I did my show many years ago with host Brad Walton from WCCO Radio, Minneapolis. I had been on his show many times, but we did a special on the Christmas Star, and we promoted it quite a bit. And so, you know, a lot of people listening, you know, probably in the millions of people listening. Shortly after that show, the internet was flooded, absolutely flooded, and we counted about 30,000 postings that came from so-called respectable astronomers or astronomy agencies trying to push the idea that the Christmas Star was a planetary alignment. Now, I've talked about this before, so just briefly, a planetary alignment, first of all, they occur all the time. We probably have two or three a year. So it's certainly nothing extraordinary, certainly nothing that the three kings or Herod or anybody else would notice as unusual over, you know, waiting for thousands of years for the Messiah. And if you think you're waiting for some kind of planetary alignment, well, it's, and plus it would be predictable. They knew the stars. They knew, you know, that's another great point. It just popped in my head right now. It would be completely predictable. So there would be no surprise element. They would know years in advance that the Christmas Star would be coming and it would be certain planetary alignment. So really, there's nothing planetary alignment about the Christmas Star. But, you know, when it comes to disinformation, that really doesn't matter. It's whatever they push, and of course the unwitting public believe whatever is printed. But my point is, this past week, since I've been harping on this, and apparently they've realized how ridiculous this planetary alignment story is, they're simply coming out and saying there was no Christmas Star. Isn't that special? It just shows you the lengths that they will go to deny that what I was saying. And it's very clearly, I mean, from the time you're a little kid, the star had a tail. Now, let's talk about this. What is in the solar system? And, okay, let's do a $64,000 question type of thing where we ask questions. What are the characteristics of the Christmas Star? Well, it was discovered in the east, but they followed it to the west. So that would imply it went around the sun. And just like Venus is the morning star sometimes, and sometimes it's the evening star, sometimes it's in the east and sometimes it's in the west. So that's a very good indication that it was a celestial object in orbit around the sun. It had a tail. Now, typically the planets and things we typically see in the sky don't have tails, but in anybody's definition, if a star had a tail, then we call it a comet. That is the definition of a comet. So, the Christmas Star was a comet. The question is, which comet or what comet or what was special about it? Because we see comets all the time in the sky. With minor binoculars, you can see probably five comets at any given time. Many times there would be more in the sky. But on very occasionally we see comets that are visible to the naked eye. And of course, the ancients didn't have video games. They didn't have TV. They lived outside. And typically in the Mideast, very dry areas where you have a superb view of the night sky all the time. So they studied it. And they knew about comets, etc. But there was something about this comet that, first of all, had been predicted. And comets are, in their appearance, are not predictable. It's not something that you would have known about. They may have even known about Halley's Comet being a repeating comet, but Halley's Comet just looks like a normal comet. So and it comes back every 70 years. So what's so unusual about this Christmas comet, the star with the tail on it, that became stationary over the Bethlehem? And the three kings were tuned enough to know about this. Herod knew about it. They all knew about it. So these were four independent people, not three, four independent people that knew that this thing up in the sky was the real deal. And so the situation is that the Christmas star was a comet, not a planetary alignment. It was in the sky for a very long time, just like comets, and possibly up to years. So this would make it in the category of, for example, Comet Hale-Bopp. Hale-Bopp came in with a companion. Now, when this was seen, for some reason, the CIA freaked out. Literally freaked out. And that's a whole other story. You can, if you want to know more about that, listen to my DVD on the 20th anniversary of Hale-Bopp, the Planet X, and Harrington Expedition update. That's a DVD. It's downloadable on my website. So listen to that. It has the full story about that. But they absolutely freaked out. And the issue was that it was an unusual comet, but it had a companion. Now, comets are not supposed to have companions because they're too small. They don't have enough gravitational attraction to keep things, even if they come remotely anywhere in the region of the solar system. Planets like Jupiter would separate them apart, and they wouldn't be there for very long. So what happened to the companion of Hale-Bopp? Well, it spun around and spun around within the coma until it lost the distance from the nucleus. That's a property of resistance, that an object will lose energy, therefore fall into lower and lower orbits. And eventually that chunk of matter, which was the orbiter, the companion, the moon, if you will, of Hale-Bopp, finally became part of the main nucleus. And we could see that happening because there were the comet was having convulsion. It was going whoosh, 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 whoosh on a constant basis. And with the whooshes, maybe a couple days apart or half a day, and they became closer and closer together, meaning that the object was getting closer and closer to the nucleus. And finally, it just stopped. And that's when the companion became part of the nucleus. But there again, the comet that was the Christmas comet was something so unique that the people in the know, Herod, the three kings who lived in totally separate countries, didn't have cell phones to call each other up and say, "Hey, buddy, do you see that, that star? That's the star. That's like planned Messiah star." Or Herod didn't call up the kings and say, "I see this star. What do you guys think over there?" No, they had to travel. They did not have communications. And so the only time they got together is when the three kings were independently following the star to the west, they met up. There was like, oh, there's some guys over there. What are you doing? Oh, we're following that star. We're looking for the Messiah. That's what I'm doing too. And they go a little farther. Well, hey, there's another guy, king with his entourage. What are you guys doing? Well, we're following that star with a tail up there because it's special and it's the predicted star for the Savior. And then they get to Herod. And Herod, they're talking to Herod, and Herod's like being real coy with them. And they go, and Herod is like, well, when you find the guy, when you find this little guy, come back and tell me because I'm real interested. And the three kings were like, they didn't trust him. They could read him. These were kings. These were guys, smart guys. And they could read Herod, and they knew that he did not have good intentions. Let's just put it that way. And that turned out to be true because Herod sent out the boys, the guard or whatever, and had the firstborn killed in the entire land because that was a firstborn boy that they were looking for. They knew that. And so when the kings returned after seeing the Christ child, when they were returning, they did not go back to Herod. They took another route. Because Herod would have known, hey, the three kings are passing through again. I'm going to nab these guys and find out. Because why? Because Herod was paranoid, like any leader, paranoid of his position of power, that some young, nobody is going to come up and take his throne. So that's the Christmas story, and it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. And all of this, by the way, was predicted in the scriptures. There were hundreds of scriptures that were fulfilled when all of this took place in the whole life of Christ and the crucifixion, etc. So you have to understand that these people had been waiting for thousands of years, literally, for these signs. And now, once again, it's kind of like even today. The people, the uppity people, keep information from the public, and they put out false information for the public to consume. And that actually leads into one of my topics here, my initial topics about the prizes in science, where I'll get into that. But it's the same type of thing where they promote science, which is totally bogus, and have prizes and awards and, you know, fanfare and published papers and peer-reviewed journals, and it's all a bunch of, well, I can't say it on the air, but you know what we're talking about. The kind of stuff you need hip boots for, smells bad, and you have to wade through it to get to the truth. So that's what we're talking about here. And it was no different back then. Human nature was the same back then as it is now. And the people in power are deathly afraid of you, the public, getting to know the truth. Because in the truth, if you have a public that's easily manipulated, if you have a public that does not know what's going on, then you have an easily manipulated public that you can twist around and do anything you want and create wars and have their kids go off and get their legs blown off or even worse, killed or whatever. And everybody, you know, goes along with it because they don't know any better. They've been primed. They've been, you know, from the time they walk into kindergarten, they're being prepped for this life that is absolutely insane, you know, living in cities, working 40-hour-a-week jobs and, you know, not having enough money to make ends meet and paying interest on loans to somebody that has no money at all and creates it out of thin air. That's a pretty good gig if you can get it. So controlling the public and information to the public is paramount. It's absolutely required and necessary. So the false world that we're given to live in goes way back to the days of Herod. Anyway, a little added amount of information there. And so the Christmas star was a comet. It was a very unusual comet. And it had to be so unusual that when all of these guys saw it, it was like, wow, that's it. And so we don't really know, because even just like Columbus with his Perry Reese map, that's been made public. But a lot of this stuff, we don't really know. It's been hidden in the basement of the Vatican. And, of course, there are people there that know. But this brings up the issue of the CIA flipping out completely when Comet Hale-Bopp showed up. And actually, there was good reason. But also, now, I'll just give you a little insight here that I discovered, is that Hale-Bopp was officially discovered, was July 23rd of 1995. That's when Hale and Bopp, the two discoverers, amateur astronomers, discovered it and registered it and got their names on possibly one of the most famous publicly known comets in history. And it was in the solar system, visible with the naked eye, for a period of about 6 years. And it had a companion. Now, that tells us also that the Christmas star, most modern comets, last for a couple days. They're visible maybe for a week. They're a flash in the pan. They're gone. And then you don't see them. Maybe they come in once, or maybe they come back in, 100 years, or like Halley's Comet every 70 years. And so typically, it's interesting, Mark Twain, interestingly enough, was born on the first visible sign of Halley's Comet, and he died on the first visible sign of Halley's Comet. That's a story. Mark Twain, if you want to study an interesting guy, follow Mark Twain. I mean, a very interesting life, a very interesting character, with a very interesting attitude, and had little quips that set us a whole book full. But anyway, and plus his writings, etc. But the comet Hale-Bopp lasted for a period of 6 years. So this is like the Christmas star, in that it had a companion, and that's what I had been saying about the Christmas star. I think the Christmas star probably had at least two companions, or something so characteristic and so unusual that there was no question that this was the star. And just another little comment. Well, no, I'm not going to include that here. This is getting too complicated and off subject. But Hale-Bopp is a good example of a star that lasted many years and also went around the sun and was visible in different parts of the sky. So very much like the Christmas star. And interestingly enough, the CIA just absolutely flipped out over this. And the point that I'm trying to make here is that Hale-Bopp, even though it was officially discovered July 23rd, 1995, it had been really discovered about 1989 by Robert Harrington, the head of the Naval Observatory. And that's what he was doing. He was looking for what literally NASA called Planet X. And in my DVD, I go through the whole scenario, how it was on a near direct collision course with Earth when it was first discovered, and they knew it had a companion. And so that, what's so significant about that? Well, the companion in astronomy, by its orbital distance, the distance of the orbit from the nucleus, which would have been the nucleus of Hale-Bopp, but it had not become a planet. It had not become a comet yet. So they could see the companion, and they could, with the period, in other words, the time it took to go around once around the nucleus, with the period and the distance from the nucleus, there's a fairly simple astronomical mathematical formula to determine the mass of the nucleus. So right off the bat, if it would not have had a companion, they wouldn't have known. They would have to rely on, like, albedo measurements and reflectivity measurements, which are very, very, they're way off base. But they had a companion to use, so they knew Nat's behind exactly that Hale-Bopp was big. And it was on a direct collision course with Earth. So the CIA flipped into high gear mode, shut down NASA, and Daniel Golden came in from the CIA to shut down NASA. Now, this occurred during the first Gulf War when George Bush Sr. was still president, mind you. So as early as 1989, this was known. And it, in the final orbit was solidified in 1991 with Harrington's, in May of 1991, when Harrington went to New Zealand to take his final photographs. And when he came back, he mysteriously died in his work. Some people say, oh, that's conspiracy theory. Well, if he died of natural causes, he died of cancer very suddenly. He was a young guy, very healthy. But if this was not some kind of nefarious scenario, because I think Harrington was an honest guy, he was probably going to go public with it, like Gene Schumacher, which is another case of a guy who had equipment down in that region of the solar system and mysteriously had everything burned. His observatory was burned to the ground, and he died in a strange auto accident out in the middle of the Australian outback. So anyway, there's a lot of strange stuff going around this object Hale-Bopp. But at any rate, the issue with Hale-Bopp is it was on a direct collision course with Earth, and eventually, because of the tail drag, which didn't occur until into the after it had been publicly discovered in the 1995 region up to around 1997, where it actually crossed over through the plane of the ecliptic, the tail drag had slowed it down to the point where Earth had moved ahead in its orbit and missed us by a mile, an astronomical mile. We were one quarter of a year advanced in our orbit when Hale-Bopp crossed our path, our orbit around the sun. And if Earth would have been there, it would have been within a million miles for lunar distances, and we would have been in the middle of that coma. And I'd probably not be talking to you here right now. If I was still alive, I'd be living in some cave, and the ocean levels would be different. We would have had another combination Noah's Flood and Venus event all in one. So life would not be good right now. But the CIA knew this and shut down NASA. A lot of people left NASA. I saw it happening, but at the time I didn't understand what was happening. Now I do. And so anyway, the whole point is that things are really about the same as they were in the days of Herod. That the hierarchy, the CIA, the police force of the world bankers, is the was flipping out over this. But of course, it's coupled with the fact that this had a very near collision course with Earth, which it did. And part of my Harrington expedition was to go down physically in with equipment into the Southern Hemisphere. And this was done a couple years ago, and verify that there's nothing else down there. Because I had thought, and the Hopi Indians had thought, based on their legends, that the that there were two objects, and with the planet X was preceded. Now, this is going to get a little bit interesting here, because I've always thought that the timing for Venus coming into the solar system was the very same timing as the last appearance of Hale-Bopp, which is about 4,200 years ago, in about, well, 1995, 4,260 years prior. But that's about the same time that Venus came into the solar system. And in the Colbrun, we are very much aware, it's very clear that there are multiple big comets in the sky at one time, and they're doing battle, which means they were at the same time, they were concurrent in the solar system. So one of them, Hale-Bopp, went back out, and it probably lost quite a bit of orbit prior to that, so it probably had not been here for maybe as much as 6 or 7,000 years prior to that, because Hale-Bopp, during its orbit, lost a considerable part of its orbital period from 4,250 years down to around 2,600 years. It was almost cut in half. And so it, on the previous orbit, it would have lost an equivalent amount. So we can estimate, make an estimate that Hale-Bopp had been here 4,200 years ago, but prior to that, it would have been 6 or 7 or 8 or 9,000 years. Hard to say exactly. But the Venus, the comet, now, I made calculations. They're in the appendix of my three-part comet paper, which you will find at the end of the I believe it's at the end of the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book, the three-part comet paper. In one of the appendices, I make a calculation that it took Venus about 600 years from the time it was captured by Jupiter to nestle into its current orbit through tail drag, planetary interactions with Mars, then Earth twice, and then the tail drag reduction of its orbit into the orbit where we see it today, about 600 years. So that would put it back, being that was 3,500 years ago, that puts it right there at the same time when Hale-Bopp was here before, and the Colbrun tells us about multiple big comets in the solar system at one time, and the Hopi Indians legends, which I fully believe, talked about too. They talked about and this is what the Hopi dolls are about, the red Kachina and the blue Kachina, and they're very specific that these were comets. And so they were expecting that Hale-Bopp was the blue Kachina and the bigger one was the red Kachina, which would follow. And I've been on TV. I think I talked about this on the History Channel special where I was a guest there at the there was a 6-part series. I had a good part in. I was out in Universal Studios filming for that a number of years ago, and that's re-aired many times on the History Channel. But they were expecting two comets coming into the solar system, or two Planet X type objects. And if you look at the cover photo of my book, Planet X Comets and Earth Changes, it's very clear that the indigenous people were very aware of big comets, and that a big comet was different than a little comet, in that the nucleus was big, not just that it was somehow closer to Earth. And so, but the reality was, is there was no red Kachina. There was no object following Hale-Bopp. It had its companion, but the companion was pretty small. So that wasn't Planet X, the companion. And in other words, these two objects did not somehow combine into one. But the idea, I believe, is that Venus, in fact, was the red Kachina or the blue Kachina, one of the two. But Hale-Bopp had a nucleus that was very big. And, of course, NASA lied about it. They can fake the data. They got all the Tier 2 scientists who go out and mouthpiece the baloney that they want you to believe. They want you to believe that Hale-Bopp had a big nucleus and it was 42 miles across, like whoppingly big, you know. But in reality, it was very likely the size of Earth or larger. It could have been as small as our moon, but it was certainly that big. And it was much bigger when it went out of the solar system. I saw pictures of the nucleus of Hale-Bopp, which were close-ups, after it stopped be acting as an active comet on the way out of the solar system. And there were volcanoes spewing big plumes up into the sky above the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. So it's an active planet in formation. It lost its orbit, went from 4,200 years approximately down to 2,600 years. And the next time it'll be back will be in about 2,600 years. And then it'll probably lose another half of that down to 1,300 years. Then the next time down to 600 years. The next time down to 300 years. The next time down to 150 years. The next time down to 75, which is the equivalent of Halley's Comet. And the next time, if it doesn't have interactions with Earth, which it's an Earth-crossing, an Earth-orbit-crossing comet, if we have an interaction with it, then, but that's far in the distant future. But the point is that there were two big objects that came in with Hale-Bopp, and only one of them was there, and I went down to verify that. I went down to look and see, is there, even 20 years after Hale-Bopp came through, could there still be something moving in down there that, was the red Kachina? And what I proved conclusively is that there was not. That region of the sky was empty. And so the red Kachina, or the blue Kachina, the red Kachina, one of those is no longer on that path coming into the solar system down from the south. So Hale-Bopp was one of them, and so I suspect that Venus was the other, because they were they did cross very closely to Jupiter. And Jupiter was the object that captured Venus and sent it into the plane of the solar system, where it began its interaction, electrical interactions, and the ancients saw this, and that was eventually encountered Mars, took the atmosphere and oceans off of Mars, had two encounters with Earth, which were the first one was not bad, but the second one was where the Moses event, that's where the Mayans talk about it, Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent god of the night sky, who carried the oceans on his back and had tremendous rain and windstorms, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, etc., were caused by Quetzalcoatl, eventually whose heart became the planet Venus. So that was the mythological story from all over the world, and that's what Velikovsky was studying. And now you see why they had to bury Velikovsky. Because Velikovsky had hit the nail directly on the head. And, of course, they had done all of that back in the 70s. So to the outward visible scientific community, it was Carl Sagan and those people. Remember, Carl Sagan got his notoriety from dumping Velikovsky by leading the science charge, carrying the banner, getting on the big white charger horse, leading the banner and organizing science against Velikovsky and doing away with the crazy old man once and for all. And of course, Velikovsky was not helped by the entourage of nutcases that gathered around him and eventually stealing his work and selling it wholesale using their own names. And I'm sure most of you know who I'm talking about. But that didn't help Velikovsky either. So the entourage helped to make Velikovsky look like a nutcase. But I talked to Warner Sizemore, my good friend, who passed away recently, unfortunately, and around this Christmas time, my hat's off to Warner Sizemore, dedicated guy who was Velikovsky's personal secretary. I have an interview with him on my 2-CD set, The Physics of Ancient Celestial Disasters. I have some interview time with Warner Sizemore there. You probably want to go listen to that. But Warner understood better than anybody the quandrum that Velikovsky was in. But Velikovsky was a very genteel, intelligent man. He was very, very smart. He was heads above Sagan, who was basically a tier two scientist who got a lot of fame for leading the charge against Velikovsky, and that's why Carl Sagan got the Cosmos series to be the spokesperson of astronomy to you, the people. And that also solidified the story of astronomy in the minds of people, that Velikovsky was a kook and that the solar system is stable and that comets are little dirty snowballs and, you know, the rest of the story. Cosmos, the book, is still the best-selling science book in the history of the world. And in terms of total books, it's like number one in science and number six or something in terms of the whole world, in terms of the history of books. It is like right up there. And so how many people have seen all this disinformation and swallowed it hook, line, and sinker? And the Cosmos series with Sagan, the Neil deGrasse Tyson remake, did not fare that well. But the Cosmos series with Sagan is still like the something like 600 million people have seen this. And, of course, been fed a line of complete BS. That's why I did on my paid cast the Cosmos series. It's a 15-part series dealing, basically outlining and using the talking points of Carl Sagan and, of course, the remake by Neil deGrasse Tyson in 2014. The Sagan Cosmos series was done in 1980. It was released in 1980. But Carl was in Hollywood. Of course, he was the David Duncan Chair of Astronomy at Cornell. And that was my time at Cornell, it was 79 to 81, and Sagan really wasn't around. Of course, one of the big events of the students at Cornell was if they got to take an astronomy course from Carl Sagan. And that was the end of the world if you got to, you know, take a course from Carl Sagan, and he taught like a undergrad 101 astronomy required, you know, one of those required science courses for the college there, for the undergraduate university. So that was the end of the world if you got to be in Carl Sagan's lecture of astronomy. But back to Hale-Bopp and the comets, etc., and the Christmas star and all of this. A lot of interesting history that now is very clear to me, which was not clear at the time I was living through all of this. You know, because I was right in the middle of the controversy over Hale-Bopp. I was on the Art Bell show. Of course, Art Bell was accused of murdering or being responsible for the murder of 37 people. Was it 37 or 27 Heaven's Gate people? And the alleged suicide, which turns out to be a mass murder. And I hate to talk about this kind of thing at Christmas time, but then again, Herod was murdering all the firstborn children of the countryside. You know, so these people, like I say, not much has changed. And when it comes to protecting information or putting out misinformation, so you can see how important it is for them to keep this ongoing ruse of dirty snowball comet model. And I'm going to segue away from that topic. It actually segues into another topic I'm going to talk about tonight, and that's prizes in the science community. And with this, we learn a lot of science. We learn what's going on in the world, and it's extremely important, especially for kids. This is really complicated stuff. And, when you go to school, kids, you're being fed a line of complete baloney, and the teachers don't even know it. They don't know. If you talked about this to them, they'd stare at you like, this is what's in the book. This is what I'm supposed to teach. And they can't. By law, they cannot teach anything else. If they acknowledged that I even exist, they could probably be fired because it's not in the textbook, the approved textbook that's been sanctioned by the school board and by NASA. Gee, isn't that special? So anyway, it's important for kids to understand what's going on this planet, because believe me, you ain't going to get it at school. Just a note here, I had been away, I'm just going to say that, not saying any more, but for the month of November. So the last show I had posted was November 2nd, and so my webpage had not been updated, and people went away, and I thought, well, Jim McCanny must have died or something. Nope, I didn't. I'm still here. But here's what I'm going to require. This is absolute required now for all those people out there who are going to my webpage and didn't know enough to get a shortwave radio or to listen online to my shortwave show live every Thursday evening. You are required now to go out, get yourself a Christmas present early. Get a shortwave radio, and you have to get a shortwave radio that's a good one, but it has to have the bands that go down and pick up the lower numbers like 5070. A lot of shortwave radios don't go down that far. There's some that go down to the 3 megahertz range. But picking a shortwave radio is difficult, and I particularly carry one with me when I travel. It's one I got a long time ago, but it's now no longer in production. But I have a Kato KA1101, and it's really a great little radio. And I monitor my own radio show whenever I'm traveling around the world, and I've heard it from the mountaintops of Colorado to the all over. I've heard it, you know, in the South Pacific. I've heard it in the Caribbean. I've heard it in the, you know, remote areas of, I won't say where, but all over the planet where I've been. And so you can hear this radio show. But the point is, there might be a time at which maybe I can't get to update my webpage. And you should be listening to my show live on shortwave. That's my point. So just because my webpage didn't get updated, my live show was there. Every week I was doing my show live on shortwave. And then that's archived, and eventually I can get those posted on the webpage. But if I'm off on one of my self-proclaimed assignments, and it doesn't mean I died and went to heaven, but I very, very rarely miss my regular show. I think the first show in September I did as I was driving out of Atlanta, escaping the massive insanity of the Hurricane Irma evacuation of Florida and Atlanta. So I did about 15 minutes as I was driving on the freeway live. And then I said, okay, this is nuts, because there were some good old boys next to me with one of these big super trucks, like pickup trucks. I mean, the wheels were taller than my car. And I was trying to drive and keep on the highway. And I thought, well, I don't want to get killed over this. So I cut out early, but that's a rare, rare, rare event where I don't am not live on my shortwave show. So the people writing in going, oh, you must have died. Well, you didn't go and listen to your shortwave. So now you, buddy, or Mr., Mrs., whatever, are have an assignment. You got to get a shortwave radio, and you have to listen to my show on shortwave radio. And if nothing else, if you don't do that, listen on your smartphone. Get the, TuneIn app or one of those radio apps and listen to shortwave WWCR at 6 p.m. Central Time Thursday evening. That's my live show. Go there and listen on shortwave, because there might be some time when, due to extenuating circumstances or the internet just isn't there anymore, or it's being blocked or something, the WWCR streams live. It re-airs from WTWW Nashville on Friday night, and all the ways to listen are on my webpage. So go there, get educated, all the different ways. It's on satellite on Saturday in the Western Hemisphere. If you're in Africa or the Mid East or Europe, it re-airs three times on Saturday by satellite. So there's all of these ways to listen to my show. And so educate yourself, get a shortwave radio, get your smartphone set up or your computer or whatever set up to listen to the live streaming at WWCR. I'm on Tower 2, and you can choose your method if you have Windows, or there's various methods. Just go through the process of going and listening online to the live streaming, and but get yourself a shortwave radio. And if you don't get good reception, get an antenna. If you don't have good reception, write to the station and tell them, and they'll work with you so that that's one piece of feedback that they want, is if you cannot hear the shows. They want to know where you're at or whatever so they can fix things. So your assignment, everybody out there that thought I died and went to heaven or went away or whatever, is to get yourself a shortwave radio, or at least minimally get your smartphone or computer set up to listen to the streaming online. But I want people to get shortwave radios, really, and get a good one, and the shortwave bands go down into the, at least so you can get 5.070 megahertz, because that's the, is that the wintertime frequency of my show on Thursday evening, WWCR. And then set it up and listen. Learn how to use that shortwave radio. And there's a little trick you can use with shortwave radio. If you get those earphones that are like an amplifier, you know, it's like a sound canceling, and it's a set of earphones. You know, you plug it in. It's got the little 1/8-inch radio jack stereo on it. Plug those in, and you will get reception of stations that you cannot even hear on shortwave. But you don't have to do that to listen to my show. You should be able to listen to it with the shortwave radio. And I would suggest buying they're just like a little wire antenna. It plugs into the antenna port on your shortwave radio, and it's like maybe a 25-foot string of wire. That's all it is. And you just lay that out across the room or outside over the balcony, and that will enhance your pickup. And also make sure there's no hills or physical obstructions between you and Nashville, Tennessee. So if you're on the west side of the Rocky Mountains, then you're not going to hear very well. When you get up on the east side of the Rockies, you're going to have a straight open shot to Nashville, Tennessee. Or if you're in the hills someplace, you might have signal blocked a little bit, but make sure you have a clear vista of the, not that you're going to see Nashville, Tennessee, but in that direction. So know where you're at when you're listening, etc. Okay, so that's your assignment. Get a shortwave radio. I didn't die and go to heaven. I just was busy, but I did not miss my shortwave show. I was there, and you didn't know about it. So bad you. Okay? This is bad, bad on you for not knowing that. And then someday we might be in critical situation if they pull down the internet, and you're going to be sitting there with your finger up your nose thinking that Jim McCanny's not on the air, when in fact I am. So, okay, enough of that. Okay, on prizes, scientific prizes. Now, here's a little game that goes on. Scientific prizes. It's a game. So what they do is they set up these prizes. And the latest one is funded by none other than Mark Zuckerberg and a host of other people. But the basic idea is that there's a lot of politics involved in who wins the prize. And these prizes, you might think, are a bit, you know, unimportant, innocuous, not very, you know, but not very, you know, they're a one-time thing, but they're really not. What they do is they create these prizes, and then they make sure that these certain people get the prize. In this case, we're talking about a group at NASA that supposedly is confirming Big Bang and the beginning of the universe and all of this stuff, which is complete baloney because the universe is not expanding. The assumption is that the redshift implies that the universe is expanding. And the redshift is caused by internal factors within a star. Our own sun gives off a redshift. Comets give off redshifts, and it's due to electrical effects, and that's something I proved in the laboratory. It's the induced electric dipole redshift. And so the universe is not expanding. There's no redshift data that talks about that proves that the Earth is, that the universe is expanding. So, but anyway, the whole idea of prizes is it's a mutual admiration society. So they bequeath these prizes on certain groups, and after they win a few of them, then all of a sudden, guess what? Then they have a good chance of getting the Nobel Prize, because what is the Nobel Prize Committee going to do? They're going to look and say, well, the evidence is building. And the trouble is there was a precedent that was broken a number of years ago when a group at NASA won a Nobel Prize, and that's completely illegal. Nobel Prizes were always meant to be individuals working on topics that they selected and coming up with innovative scientific achievements. But groups of people with government funding has never been allowed, but that precedent was broken. And so now you can see what's going, I think it's called the WMAP team, and this is a group at NASA dealing with the alleged background radiation measurements. Now, the problem with the, by the way, the prize is called Breakthrough Prize, and its webpage, breakthroughprize.org, talks about the various prizes. There's one in mathematics, and actually the mathematics prize looks fairly interesting, that there was a progress made in the solutions for polynomials. And so, you know, that's a valid prize. That's something that was an outstanding question. But in the case of space science and physics, the push, of course, is to get these groups to start winning these prizes. So the WMAP group has been winning prizes. One is the Shaw Prize for Astronomy. Another one in 2012 was the Gruber Prize in Cosmology. And so what you see is these prizes being awarded. And, of course, they're once you get, like I say, enough of these, then it's almost a shoe-in for a Nobel Prize. And the problem is, once you establish with prizes the phony cosmology that they're trying to pawn off on you, the public, then it becomes solidified even further. The monopoly becomes well instated. So at any rate, I just want to point this out because it's really a game. It's a game. In fact, we've caught people creating prize scenarios, creating prizes out of thin air, getting people to fund them, and then awarding the prizes to their own constituents. And we've caught people doing this. And anyway, I won't go into detail on that. But prizes are a ruse. And if you look at a person like Zuckerberg, he is a bought and paid for, you know, he made his billions by selling your information to the CIA. The CIA bought his operation. So Mark Zuckerberg is one of the internet billionaires who sold, you know, like we have Facebook, Google, Twitter, Yahoo, you know, the list goes on and on. with the CIA coming in with basically drug money, and also through their investment firm in Qtel, and buying up corporations that basically gather information on you, the public, and put it into databases. So anyway, that's why those people are billionaires and you're not, because they developed a system that was handy for gathering information on the public and were able to sell it to the CIA and join the good old boy club. Okay, so anyway, just a bit of discussion on prizes. Okay, so I got about a minute left here. I just want to let you know that right now would be about the last time that you could safely order products for Christmas presents. And due to my webpage had a problem, I won't go into details, but I had to restructure it. But it's actually a good thing in a sense. I have a completely new shopping cart with drop-down menus, much, much more condensed sales page, much easier to use. The only problem is I've got all the water filter stuff converted, but I don't have the book stuff converted yet. So hopefully I'll have that done in the next day or so. But in terms of sales, primarily people are buying water filter stuff, and all of that, the new sales page is the same link to the sales page, but the sales page, go there and check it out. Go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, and follow the link to the sales page. But what I'm going to tell you is that right now, probably this weekend, ordering this weekend, is the last time we can guarantee that you'll get products prior to Christmas. And we actually are behind a bit on Imperial filters, so anything having Imperial filters, we can't guarantee that it'll get there by Christmas, but just tell your people that it's coming and let them know they're getting the best water filter products on the planet. Also remember that the commercial filters are there, and they have their own order buttons now too, and you save greatly when you buy water filter elements as a package, with whether it's the commercial filters or whether it's the stainless steel or whether it's the above sink, below sink, inline on demand, water on demand filters, whatever, you get a good saving if you buy extra filter elements when you make the purchase. And that's all in the drop down menus. So go there and check that out. And like I say, make sure if you want things prior to Christmas, we're pushing it at this point, but make your orders this weekend, and we'll make every effort to get them out to you. Depends on where you come in on the order list, but we've had some pretty good ordering lately, and that's good to see, because my page was actually down for about 2 weeks during a couple weeks ago, and that was all cured now. So go there, jmccsci.com, go to the sales page. Also the paid cast, also the wing stuff, all of that at the top of my page. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.